Sunday for the International Gospel Hour.
WBNN. Welcome to the Bible Answer Program. This live question-answer program airs every Sunday morning from 7:30 to 8 o'clock a.m. on News Talk 770 a.m., 92.5 FM, WVNN. If you have Bible questions or comments, please call 1-866-494-9866. Now, here are your moderators for Bible Answer.
Good morning. This is Pat Donahue. We appreciate you listening. We emphasize on this program the truth. You remember Jesus said,
just a little bit low.
If you continue in my word, you are my disciples indeed. In verse 32, he says, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And there he's talking about, we know from the context, being made free from sin. And so that implies that only the truth will make us free from sin, that false religious teaching us to be lost. That's why it's so important, why we emphasize on this program actually what the truth is, what the Bible teaches. Sometimes we compare and contrast that with other people, what they teach, and that serves to illustrate the point that 2 plus 2 does not equal 4 and 5 at the same time. Whatever the Bible says about religion, it's right. And if somebody teaches something different than that, it's wrong. And you can't be saved by following something that's different than the truth. That's why we teach, try to teach the truth here. And if we teach something that's wrong, we want you to correct us. I have on the program this morning a guest, Greg Gwynn, from Columbia, Tennessee. He worships with the College View Church of Christ there. I have loved and respected and appreciated Greg for about 30 years now. I was thinking about that. Greg, are you on the air with
me? Yeah, Pat, great to be with you this morning.
Time has flown, hasn't it, Greg?
Oh, boy, it does. I knew you before you were married and had children, and now you've got a big family, and it goes way back.
Greg has always been one of my favorites because he deals, well, we were just talking about the truth. He deals with the truth. He says what the Bible says. He lets the chips fall where they may. Greg, I was just been less than a month ago. I saw a joke on the internet. I think it was when Senator Ted Cruz announced that he was going to run for president, and then
Right. Some
sort of liberal was making fun of his moniker, Cruz 2016. You know, meaning we want to elect Cruz in 2016. He says 2016 is how old Mr. Cruz thought the earth was. I think it's funny how politicians would use just about anything to bring their opponents down. In this case, they were making fun of Senator Cruz's religious belief that God created the earth, humans, animals, and not that it all developed by evolution.
Yeah.
So they were making fun of how long he thinks the earth is only 2016 years old. Tell me, it seems, Greg, that the age of the earth is an important question in this controversy.
It is. You know, we're talking about creation. We want to contrast creation with the false theory of evolution, but time is a big issue in that dispute, because if evolution occurred, everybody knows that it would have had to have happened over a long, long period of time. Time is essential to the theory of evolution. But of course, when we read our Bibles, and that's, I think, probably why they were criticizing Ted Cruz, because he has respect for what's taught in the Bible, I think. I don't know to what extent, but I think his father is a preacher of some sort or another. So he would be labeled as a Bible believer by the skeptics. And so evolution says long periods of time, but the Bible suggests that the earth is not all that old, that probably on the order of 6,000 years old is how old the earth is. Well, of course, evolution is not talking about thousands of years. It's talking about billions of years. If you were going to sort of break down the evolutionary timetable, in other words, what would an evolutionist say about the age of the universe, the age of the earth? They're talking about 20 billion years. 20 billion years ago, they tell us, 20 billion years ago, the Big Bang happened. It's incomprehensible to me how they would suggest that all of the matter in the entire universe was compressed into a tiny speck smaller than the head of a pin. Of course, you compress, I don't know how you could possibly do it, but if you could, if you could compress all that matter into that tiny speck, there would be tremendous pressure and it ultimately exploded, and thus the Big Bang. Of course, there was a lot of heat and force, and everything started propelling out from the side of the Big Bang, and very hot, moving very fast. It took a long, long time for things to slow down and cool off enough to begin to solidify. So the Big Bang supposedly happened 20 billion years ago, and it took until about 5 billion, so about 15 billion years for things to slow down and cool off enough to begin to form our galaxy and our solar system. They tell us that the Earth was formed about 5 billion years ago. And then, of course, there was no life on planet Earth. For a long, long time, there was no life on planet Earth. Somehow or another, they claim, about 2 billion years ago, life suddenly generated from non-living matter. They call it the spontaneous generation of life. They don't know how that happened, and in the very best laboratory conditions, they're not able to duplicate it. But they claim that somehow or another, all the right elements came together, and life sprang from non-living matter about 2 billion years ago. Then, of course, the process of evolution kicked in. And so from that single living cell that generated back then, all the living life forms that we see on planet Earth have supposedly evolved, not just animals, but all the plants, everything else that's alive on planet Earth. And, of course, there's just unimaginable numbers of living things on planet Earth. They have all evolved over the last 2 billion years. Man, of course, they argue, man's a rather late comer in this evolutionary scene. Most estimates by evolutionists say man evolved about 4 million years ago on planet Earth. So we're talking about a 20 billion year history of the universe, a 5 billion year history of the Earth, 2 billion years of life on Earth, 4 million years of man on Earth. Now, I don't know about you, Pat, but I just can't see any way to make that harmonize with what I read in my Bible. When I put together the ages of the men who lived and how long they lived and who their offspring were and so forth, it comes out to about 6,000 years. Creation happened, according to the Bible timeline, creation happened about 4,000 years before Christ lived on Earth. So that's a very notable difference, and I don't see how you harmonize them.
I guess they need all this time. Instead of 6,000 or 10,000 years, they need all this time because there would be no way that evolution could occur in just a few thousand years, right?
Exactly, and that's why they come up with those kind of numbers. I have a quote here from a guy named George Walz. He was a Harvard professor. He won the Nobel Prize. And I just notice how self-contradictory this statement is, Pat. He said, "Time is the hero of the plot. Given so much time, the impossible becomes possible. The possible becomes probable, and the probable becomes virtually certain. One has only to wait. Time itself performs the miracles." Well, I don't know about you, but by definition, impossible things never become possible. But this Harvard professor said, given enough time, impossible things become possible. That's why they need that time, Pat.
I got a quick question. Where did that speck come from?
Well, of course, that's the thing. They haven't really solved the total dilemma, because that theory requires that matter actually is eternal, that it's always been here. They can't answer that question. So they try to move it back. They try to move the question back farther away, but they still end up with unanswerable questions. And I really believe that it takes a greater amount of unfounded belief. And I think we have foundations for our belief.
Mm-hmm.
I think they have unfounded belief. There's a lot of it in the theory of evolution.
Well, Greg, how does this evolutionary timetable contrast to the timetable set forth in the Bible? You already talked about that a little bit. Do you want to elaborate?
Yeah, there's this big contrast, but of course, some Christians or some people who claim to believe in the Bible, at least, feel compelled to try to harmonize those two things. They're so extremely different that it just seems like it's impossible. But they want to try and force the Bible into that unproven evolutionary timetable. And I don't know why they would feel the need to do that. I don't know, Pat. I don't know whether it's because they fear ridicule by the scientific community. Well, maybe they fear being criticized, like Ted Cruz was criticized for believing what the Bible says about the age of the earth. But anyway, they've come up with some methods to try and figure out how can we get this long billions of year history into the account that the Bible teaches. And what they do, Pat, is they try to squeeze that into Genesis 1. You know, Genesis 1 tells about the creation of the universe and the earth. It talks about it having happened in six literal 24-hour days, I believe. But there's 6 days described there in Genesis chapter 6, and then God rested on the seventh day. And so what they've said is those days were not literal days. They weren't days like we know now. The days were actually long, long periods of time. And that's sometimes called, Pat, the day-age theory,
mm-hmm.
that each day of Genesis 1 was actually a long age or eon of time. I just think that's wrong. It's error. It's an unnecessary compromise. And I think as Christians, we need to oppose that. We need to stand firmly and say that's not true. And denounce that as a false doctrine.
It seems like a lot of religious people, so-called believers, are compromising on this and lots of other issues, especially in the last few years.
Oh, I think so too. And this issue among our brethren has been a controversial thing in recent years, because unfortunately some have taken that compromising viewpoint. I think there's a lot of reasons, lots of arguments how we could prove that the days of Genesis 1 were literal 24-hour days.
Well, when you say the day-age theory, I guess you're referring to the fact that they say the days in Genesis 1 are like, each day is like a million years or something like that, right?
Yeah, or even longer. I suppose to get harmonized with the evolutionary timetable, they'd have to be billions of years long.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, and so the Bible doesn't actually lay out for us in detail exactly how old the earth is, you know, in number of years, but it does tell us exactly how long it took for God to create the earth and everything therein, and that's what you're referring to, 6 24-hour literal days, right?
Right.
What are some of the arguments that would prove that the days in Genesis 1 were literal 24-hour days and not like eons of time per day?
Well, the first thing I'd observe, Pat, is that words should be understood in their literal sense, and unless there's some compelling reason to give them a figurative meaning. Now, we know the Bible has figurative language in it. We understand that. But a basic rule of Bible interpretation would be that words should be understood in their literal sense unless there's something that would cause you to understand that the word is being used figuratively. And there's nothing like that in Genesis 1 when it talks about days. The Hebrew word in Genesis 1 is the word yom. And if you were going to spell it with English letters, you'd spell it Y-O-M. He used the word for days. Now, if Moses, who wrote Genesis, wanted to describe long ages of time, there were Hebrew words that meant that. The Hebrew word olam or dor, those can mean long, indefinite periods of time. And if that's what Moses wanted to convey, then he could have used a different word. Or he could have added an adjective to the word yom. He could have added the adjective Rab, for instance, and used the expression Yom Rab, which means a long day. And he didn't do any of that. He used the word for day, and there's nothing in the context of Genesis 1 that would make us begin to think that he had a figurative meaning in place. So my first argument would be, Pat, that words should be understood literally unless there's some reason to look at them figuratively. And here in Genesis 1, I don't see any reason to assign a figurative meaning.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%, Greg. Continue on.
Okay. Another argument we could make is that the meaning of the day is actually defined in the text. The first day ends in verse 5. And notice how God defined what that very first day was. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. So right there we have a description of what the day was. It was a period of light followed by a period of darkness, one day. Well, that's how we mark days, of course. Now, that doesn't necessarily define how long the light period was or how long the day period was. But if we look at, if we go down to verse 11, God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself upon the earth." And it was so. "And the earth brought forth grass, herb yielding seed after his kind, the tree yielding fruit whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the third day." Well, by the third day, we've got plants growing on planet Earth. Well, we know that the plants can't survive long periods of light followed by long periods of darkness. In other words, we know that a day was just one period of light followed by one period of darkness.
Because it says the evening and the morning were the first day.
Right. But now someone says, well, maybe the light period was 10 million years long, followed by a dark period 10 million years long.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been, because by day three already we have plants that could not have survived for that long.
They couldn't have survived in the 10 million years of darkness.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You know, if we were under constant sunlight, Pat, we'd be way too hot. In other words, it's amazing how God has so uniquely designed our planet Earth and its position, its relative location to the sun. We're at exactly the right spot, and the rotation of the Earth on its axis is precisely as it needs to be. If the Earth rotated a little slower, if our days were longer, we'd get too hot, and our nights would be too cold.
And so
life could not have existed on planet Earth if the days were anything other than 24-hour days. Based upon the way they are, the way the word is used in the text, the way it's defined, and the order of creation.
That's very interesting, and I think conclusive, Greg. And one thing that's interesting to me about it is you're using what the Bible says along with what we know from science, just basic science that kids know in elementary school, to show that this long period of time won't fit in with what the Bible says.
I think you're right. You know, actually, Pat, the construction of the words in Genesis 1 also argues for literal days all throughout the text, like verse 5, verse 8, verse 13. It talks about the first day. It talks about the second day. Whenever that kind of construction, first day, second day, and so forth, that's found more than 100 times in the Old Testament, and it always is literal. It's never figurative. There's no exception. Whenever that ordinal is placed before the day, first day, second day, again, that's a typical construction in the Hebrew Old Testament. We see it lots of places, over 100 times in the Old Testament. And it is always, everywhere, literal. It's never used figuratively. So again, that'd be another reason why we would look at this as a literal meaning, not a figurative one. These days need to be understood as literal 24-hour days.
So in the way we speak today, sometimes I might say in the day of somebody, and I might mean a long period of time, but if I said 5 days or 3 days, I would always mean three or five 24-hour days, not a long time period.
That's right. You might mention back, you might say, back in my father's day.
Yeah.
Well, we would understand that would mean during that time period when your father lived. But if you said, on my father's first day, something happened. Well, everyone would understand you would mean on the day of his birth, on that 24-hour day that he was born.
Uh-huh.
You're describing there. So again, what's kind of interesting, Pat, is we use words a lot. Our usage of words is very similar to the way we see them used in the Bible. I mean, and it as someone would say, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
How much time we got, Pat? We got another minute or two?
At least 5 minutes. 5 minutes, Greg.
Okay.
Continue on. It's so interesting what you're talking about.
Let me suggest another argument from the text that would, I think, prove the several consecutive 24-hour days. Look at we already read verse 11, 12. Plant life was created on day three. But if you go down in the text, and just to save time, I won't read this, but if you go down in the text, insect life was created on either day five or six, and some people will dispute that back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably lean toward day six, but it doesn't really matter for the argument I'm wanting to make here. Insects were not created until day five or day six.
Mm-hmm.
Now think of the implications of that. If you got plant life on day three, but it's millions, maybe billions of years later when insects come along. Think about how so many plants require insects to pollinate their blooms so that they can produce seeds. If there weren't any insects, there'd be no pollinization, and there would be no seeds. Those types of trees and plants would die off because they're not being pollinated, and therefore they're not producing seeds to replicate themselves. And so again, now that's not a problem for us if we believe these are literal consecutive days. Plants on day three, insects on day five or six, no problem. But if you're trying to say that each of those days is millions or billions of years long, then you got a big problem.
Again, you're using combination of what the Bible says in science. That's that's pretty conclusive, Greg. I appreciate that. Let me mention or ask you about an argument. And that's the one I've heard about from Exodus 20 about how that the days of creation are compared to the Sabbath day. Were you planning on mentioning that?
Yeah, let's talk about that real quick, because I think we're about out of time. But I think there's also a compelling argument from Exodus chapter 20 at verse 11. Exodus 20 verse 11 says, "For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it." Well, in Exodus 20, verse 11, what we have there is the plural of that Hebrew word we were reading in Genesis 1. The word is yom, and the plural of it is yamin. Now, that's a really common word in the Old Testament. In the Hebrew Old Testament, that's found over 700 times. Every time you read that plural word, yamin, in the Old Testament, it's always literal. There's never an instance where it's used figuratively.
Always literal, meaning always 24 hours.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so in Exodus 20, verse 11, when it says, "In 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth," then we have to believe that it's saying that is literally the case. No figurative language is being employed. And of course, I think, Pat, that it serves as a pattern for Israel's week and the observance of the Sabbath day under the Old Testament law.
Okay. And so one thing that's really good. Another thing in verse 11, he's comparing it to the Sabbath day, and the Sabbath day for the Israelites was only 24 hours long, right?
Right, exactly. And so I think that pattern there is what we're looking at, too. Yeah, I think you're right.
If, think we got one or two more minutes. If you have anything else, another point or anything else you'd like to say in summary, Greg, go ahead. You got the floor.
Well, I would just say, Pat, that I think all of us who believe in the Bible need to believe in the literal creation account of Genesis 1. There's no reason at all for us to try to compromise that with the false claims of evolutionary science. They're unproven. They're unprovable. Again, you talk about taking a blind leap of faith. I think you have to take a really blind leap of faith to believe in the evolutionary scheme. We have every reason to believe that the Bible tells the correct history of the creation of the world and the universe. We have an all-powerful God. It's certainly within his capability to be able to do exactly what he said he did in Genesis 1. I believe we should accept that. We should defend that truth. We should oppose those who teach otherwise.
Greg, we appreciate so much you being on with us today.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for the invitation. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, we'll look forward to it.
All right.
We're so glad that Greg Gwynn was able to bring on the program with us today. And this illustrates what we emphasize on this program, the truth. We have these two different views out here, and we're talking about Bible believers. Some Bible believers, I think, compromise with evolutionary theory and talk about God creating the earth in billions of years. Some, like Greg, teach the truth that Genesis 1, Genesis 2 teaches the truth that it was 6 24-hour literal days. You see, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free, John 8:32. Only the truth will make us free from sin. We need to emphasize, to figure out what the Bible says and teach that and not compromise on any issue, not just this issue, but any issue. As we normally do at the end of the program, if you would like to have a free Bible study, my wife and I would be glad to come by your home sometime for a 55-minute Bible study. We could talk about this issue that Greg helped us with this morning or any other biblical topic that you're interested in. I want you to call me after the program on my cell phone, 682-9753. That's Pat Donahue at 256-682-9753. You can call me this afternoon and just in the next 5 minutes or any time during the week. Request the Bible study. My wife and I'd be glad to come by sometime.